Your city, our city. Because we live here too.
Cambridge 105.
And welcome back to the Gadget Guide again, show number 46. It's gone quickly, hasn't it?
It definitely does. And how long have we been going now? I think a couple of years now almost, isn't it? Must be 18 months at least.
I'll have to look that one up. But welcome back. And this time we're going to actually talk about some stuff that you've been up to over Easter.
Yeah, it's a very, very shiny new studio here at Cambridge 105, and we thought we'd just give you a little bit of a tour about how the refit went and what was involved in doing it.
So you did this over Easter, but why was there a need to change it?
To be honest, the original Cambridge 105 Studio A, it was a little bit of a temporary throw everything together, and if you've seen the video of our first ever outside broadcast with Neil Whiteside, back then it was sort of a mixing desk thrown into a room with no carpet and a few breeze blocks on the walls. It improved a little bit since then, but it was very much still something that had just been pieced together a little bit at a time. And that was really because the station went on air and grew so rapidly from then, which meant that there was no time to actually refit the studio, because if you've got a radio station that's broadcasting 24 hours a day, you can't just say, right, everyone out for a week, we're going to take it off air and build a new studio.
So how old was the old mixer that was in the studio before this refit?
That predates Cambridge 105 by quite some time. I think it was certainly the 1980s, and I want to say it was the early 1980s. But worse than that, for historic reasons, it had met with an angle grinder at some point in its past to separate it in two. And as a result, it was basically held together with gaffer tape.
Yes, I had seen it and used it, and it was surprising it was still working, but it was doing a good job. So, I mean, like I said, why change it?
If you used to listen to Tim and Lottie on 105 Breakfast, you might have heard them mention Jeffrey. Jeffrey was the pet name for the slightly odd crunching, squeaking, squawking noises that it made, and tended to be a little temperamental at best. But also, it wasn't a studio physically that we could be proud of. Yeah, if you brought guests in, there was a lot of lashed together with the very best intentions and the very best that we could do with the time available. But ultimately, it was all a little bit cobbled together. And we wanted something a bit more professional, to grow to where the station is now and the sort of shows that we do now as well.
So I guess the other thing is then, why did you pick Easter to do it? Surely there's lots of shows that wanted to be on over Easter and lots of specials.
Yeah, and that really came down to the fact that we're all volunteers, and most of us have got day jobs as well. So I work in as a software engineer during the day, and many of the other guys do as well. So it was a 4-day period where we were all off work, and we could just sit down and say, right, from the end of Thursday evening, that's it, no more programs from the studio. We're going to work at this solidly, and we reckon we can get it done by the end of Easter Monday.
So when did you actually start planning this, and how was the planning process involved?
That was quite interesting, because I think we started about February. I think Phil Rowe, Dom Smith and myself sort of sat down and said, right, we've got to do something about this. The old desk is falling apart quite literally in our hands. When can we do this? And we looked through our calendars and sort of lined up all of our various availabilities. And we reckoned that from start of February or thereabouts, we reckoned that Easter would give us enough time to prepare, enough time to get everything ready in advance, and then have a go at it over the bank holiday.
So what were your biggest challenges while you were planning that? I mean, what could have gone wrong, and which were the critical points in your plan?
It's interesting because of the huge diversity of the shows on Cambridge 105, the way that the studio is used is also hugely varied. So if you look at many radio stations, they can actually get away with quite a simple setup, because one program largely has the same requirements to the next. Whereas if you look at our schedule, we've got the sort of the daytime programming where they've got maybe a guest or two in. You've got some of the specialist shows that might have four or five people in the studio all at once, all on air. You've got things like the new music generator, where where they have live bands playing sets in the studios. You've got some people playing off off of PCs, some people off of DJ systems, CDJs, and so on. Others playing off vinyl, other playing off CDs. You know, that pretty much anything you can imagine we had to cater for. At the same time, the studio, as you obviously know, is physically not very large at all. And so it was how we could arrange everything to make the best possible use of the space and yet accommodate all of these hugely different needs.
So, I mean, looking around the studio, it's not particularly big. You couldn't really swing a cat. I heard a rumour that you guys actually built this furniture from scratch.
Yeah, we did. We sat down and we had a very large piece of paper that Dom had put together. We sat down in a meeting room and we had bits of paper that we'd cut out into the shape of people, and then we had bits of paper that we'd cut out into the shape of record decks.
I'm guessing the largest person.
We did have a representative presenter, but I won't name any names. And we literally, we moved these bits of paper around and we tried to fit it in, and then the space that was left, we'd sort of set ourselves the goal of having a presenter, someone to sit next to the presenter if they're sort of learning how to drive the desk, and up to four guests in the studio all at the same time, which is a tight squeeze. But yeah, we built all of the desks ourselves. We built all of the shelves, all of the racking. Everything is built up from scratch.
So it's looking quite impressive, and I mean, there's pictures up on the website and on the Facebook page, but how did you keep things actually running and on the air over Easter? I mean, you said that the last show that came from the studio was Mike Howser's rock show on the Thursday evening, and then the first show from the new studio was breakfast on Tuesday morning. What happened in between?
Well, apart from a couple of, you know, sneaky preview sort of broadcast tests that we did do from Studio A, that really came down to the outside broadcast unit. We sort of nicknamed her Flossie, and she's a van, and we use her for the various OBs, but this time a little closer to home, sitting out in the car park, and we basically set up a Studio C, or, well, Studio F, we called it Studio Flossie, on the Thursday evening while Mike was on air, and we basically moved all of the playout systems that the shows used to play their music and news and so on from, and we moved all of those out into Flossie for the weekend. We had a huge amount of support from various people, yourself and Mark Hickford and Mark and Burwell and so on, supporting the presenters in what for them was obviously an unfamiliar environment with some unfamiliar setup, supporting them over the weekend. They could present their shows from out in the car park, not quite as luxurious as you might think, but it kept us on air. It meant that we kept on going with live programmes while we were literally ripping the guts out of the main studio.
So, yes, I sat in the van for a little bit helping some of the shows, and we were back to the mixer that we've used for outside broadcasts and having quite an entertaining time, especially since sat in the car park, you can see a lot more of what's going on around the studio than you can if you're in the building, because the van's got decent windows. And we had a bit of an entertaining time watching people trying to enter the graveyard, because the council had decided to lock the gate. So it was getting quite entertaining. So, yeah, probably going to have complaints that people can't have as much entertainment when they're in the studio.
I think it certainly did go down well, and all of the presenters, I have to say, were fantastic sports about the whole thing. You know, working in much less comfortable, much less familiar surroundings, but yeah, several of them, Linda and Becky and Neil and Julie and so on, yeah, they all wandered in and came to see how we were getting on in the studio and so on. And yes, Linda Ness was certainly keeping track of the zombie invasion that we thought might be going on in Mill Road Cemetery.
And I think some of the shows interviewed you guys while you were actually doing woodwork and so on in the studio as well.
Yeah, yes. I think it was Becky that picked the particularly bad time when we were all in the middle of lunch, but possibly didn't quite give the right impression compared to the amount of work we were doing. But it was good fun and really nice to have the interest as well.
So any technical hitches while the broadcast was happening from the van?
Well, we said we were going to stay on air the whole time. That didn't quite work out as being true. We went off air for about 2 minutes.
It was less than that, actually. I think it was about 15 seconds.
Well, was it that? It felt like a lot longer, as there was this great... great scream from, I think it was Ian Dayborn, who was on air at the time doing Saturday Breakfast, as everything went pitch black in the van. So we stuck our head into the office, and Julie was standing there saying, "Wait, who wants a cup of tea then?" And she'd actually unplugged the entire outside broadcast van to plug the kettle in.
Nice. Yes, it was all for only about 15 seconds because I was listening that morning and thought, it's gone quiet. And then it came back and all of your microphones came live straight away. So fortunately, none of you swore.
Of course not. We're all highly professional, Lawrence.
But yes, there was a decided amount of panic. You might have to find the recording of that one. It was certainly entertaining radio.
Yeah, I think Tim's already kept that one for safekeeping and no doubt blackmail purposes in the future.
So while we go and make a cup of tea and have a quick break for some music, we'll just make sure that all the plugs are put in, I think.
I think so. And leave the ones that are covered in yellow and black hazard tape alone.
We'll be back with you in a sec. And welcome back to the Gadget Guide, where I'm chatting to Rob about the Cambridge 105 studio refit. So, Rob, you did a whole lot of work over Easter, but what is really involved in building a studio from, I'm guessing, pretty much nothing?
Lots and lots and lots of cable. That's pretty much the first rule. However much cable you think might possibly be in a radio studio, it's way more than you think. We reckon that we used, bear in mind, as we said earlier, that it's a pretty small studio. We reckon that we used about 500 meters of cable to put everything together. And just running between the mixing desk and the sort of the panel on the wall right next to it. It's only, you know, maybe a meter or two away. We used 100 meters of cable just to make all of the connections back to there.
That's a fairly impressive amount of cabling. Now, I know your dad sneaked in. Why did your dad sneak in?
Ah, yes, I snuck in, or I think I dragged him up there is probably the fairer term. Because he actually used to be an engineer with the BBC, if I can say that here on Cambridge 105.
We've got him over to the correct side of the fence, so that's fine.
Exactly, he's retired from there now, but he used to be an engineer there, so basically he agreed to come up, and possibly in return for a 105 mug or something along those lines, he basically sat down very patiently and made up a whole load of these cable looms from the mixer back to the patch panel. But that's really only one aspect of it is the cabling. A lot of the work for us was actually woodwork. It was the construction, building the tables, the surrounds for the mixer, the racks for all of the equipment to go in, because before everything was pretty much just either dumped on top of a standard office desk or even worse, sitting on the floor. And now everything is made to fit the room. So we built up a table for all the CD players and the record decks, and then another one for the guests to sit around that's sort of tailored to the right shape. So there's all of that woodwork. Then the cabling from the mixer back to this patch panel, but then from there back to the equipment rack that sits out in the office. So you can imagine you've got four sets of computer playback coming in. You've got two CD players, two record decks, a feed from Studio B, another one for some of our remote programs and things like the Sky News source, and Nonstop 105. Yeah, all of these add together. We've got more inputs for people who bring along maybe CDJs or DJ mixers and shows like the Urban Bassline, for example. We need to have ways for them to patch themselves into the mixing desk and so on. So that, you know, there's just lots and lots of getting everything tied together, getting the computers talking to each other, getting the mixer talking to all of the audio gear, and then getting it all out onto the transmitter at the end of it.
So, I mean, if I look behind my hi-fi and TV unit and so on, it's just a cable mess. I'm guessing yours are a bit tidier and possibly labelled.
They are a lot better, yep, at the moment at least. I'm sure it'll get a little messier over time, but at the moment, everything goes from the mixer to a sort of patch panel, which basically just, you know, has everything in one place, so you can say, right, the first channel on the mixer, I want to go to that PC output 1, and the second channel I want to go to PC output 2. And if you want to change those in the future, rather than having to plug and unplug everything, you can just change it on this one patch panel, which means that the wiring is a lot easier. It's all documented and a lot more reliable as well.
So it's going to stay tidy and not become a mess. So what sort of things have you put in to make it flexible? I mean, you said that people might come along with a record deck or a CD jukebox and want to actually do something. How do they connect that up?
Yeah, exactly. And we've tried to make it as easy as possible. So above the table that our guests normally sit at, there's a few main sockets because, of course, everyone needs power. And also a couple of panels that just have normal connectors like you'd find on a hi-fi system or a normal mixer. And they can just plug into there, press a button on the mixer, and then that's available to them.
Fantastic. So it should stay looking good for a while. I mean, this woodwork is suitably impressive. You guys have done a good job of making furniture, and very impressed. What sort of challenges did you actually come across while you were building? I mean, I guess you did have to take it back almost to where the studio started before the first mixer came in.
Yeah, pretty much. All of the wall coverings came off so we could run in the new cables. I think probably The biggest sort of unexpected challenge, we'd planned it all out and we had a fair bit of contingency time. We basically planned to be finished by the end of Sunday, which gave us Monday morning and afternoon to sort of overrun if we needed to. And I think the biggest challenge is that the new mixer, although it's new to us and a lot newer and a lot better than the previous one, is still a few years old. I think 1995 or something along those lines. And some of the logic circuits in that are just starting to show their age a little bit. So these are things that basically take the buttons that you push and then turn those into actions that happen. So, for example, if you press the "I want to listen to the output of the desk" button, then it routes everything through to your headphones. And some of those had a bit of a problem. So on Saturday morning, myself and Mark in Burwell were sitting down with an oscilloscope and a multimeter and various things, and poking each of the 44 pins on this small little logic chip to try and figure out what was going on with it, and then come up with a workaround for it, which we're fairly confident we've got done, but it did mean quite a bit more poring over circuit diagrams and sort of circuit board layouts and so on than we were really expecting, but we got there.
So the main thing is it does all work.
It does, yep. Hopefully it'll stay that way. As long as no one spills a cup of coffee or anything like that over it, then we should be good.
Well, I've heard a rumour that the rule is nothing is allowed in except bottled water.
Yeah, I'm definitely a big fan of that. I spent too long varnishing that wood to want sort of Diet Coke stains over it.
So what's new on this mixer that we didn't have before, and what else is new in the studio that we didn't have before?
The flexibility is the first thing. So it means people can come along. They don't, for example, before, if people wanted to use record decks, they had to use one of the little DJ mixers, which wasn't ideal if it was just you on your own. So something like Northern Soul with Tony Della, it was a bit of an awkward arrangement. If he wanted to sit in front of the old mixing desk, the record decks weren't in the right place. They were sort of over the other side of the room, and then the mixer was somewhere else. And it was just all a bit of a challenge, whereas now it's all wired straight into the main mixer, and as soon as he puts the fader up, the record deck starts and the music goes. So it's a much, much easier system for the presenters to operate. Obviously it's also more reliable, it sounds a bit better, which is great. But we've added more capacity for guests, because previously we just had a microphone for the sort of the main host and two for guests. And that was fine for most shows, but there's some of the shows that have more people than that. So 105 Sport, for example, there's normally four of them in there. And that means they have to share microphones, which makes it quite hard to get the levels right. Whereas now we've gone up to currently three, and it will be four guest microphones as well as the presenter's mic, which means that you can get a lot more people in, you can have a much easier job and get shows that sound better at the end of it.
So these new microphones, they look a lot better than the previous ones. Are they any better?
They certainly should be. We've actually followed the lead of our friends at the BBC, and we're actually using the same microphones as they tend to. So hopefully it should sound very nice.
Excellent. So what's next on the studio? What are you going to change next?
First of all, I'm going on holiday. I think after that weekend, I think we all did about 2 weeks work in 4 days. It worked out as so. First of all, holiday, but then inevitably there's going to be things that don't quite work right. So yeah, if you hear the odd slip up on air, that's probably our fault. So we're gathering a load of feedback. We're just listening to the presenters, seeing what they find. You know, they're the ones using it from day to day. Seeing what they like, what they don't like, what we can improve, what we missed, what we forgot about, and then work from that list, really.
So first impressions from presenters who've used it?
So far, so good. I think a few teething problems, as you'd expect, but...
Very nice. So if you had unlimited budget, because I know you had quite a tight budget for this project, if budget wasn't a question, what would you go for? Would it be fully digital?
Yeah, probably. We use a digital mixer for our outside broadcasts. And if that was an option, that would be lovely. But that even the cheapest digital mixers cost much more than our entire budget for the whole project. So not quite an option just yet.
So, yes, if you want to sponsor Cambridge 105 to the tune of several thousand pounds, we'd love that, and it would buy us nice mixers. But until then, we've got something that is absolutely fantastic and is doing a very good job. So certainly thanks to the entire engineering team for all of their hard work that they put into it. That's Steve, Tony, Phil, Rob, Dom, Mark. Mark again, I threw a few hours in there as well, and certainly a lot of the presenters who were patient with all of the work that was going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone, like I say, everyone pulled together. It was a complete team effort. None of us could have done it on our own. Thanks to everyone for bearing with us, including everyone listening at home as well. If things didn't sound quite as smooth as they normally do over the Easter weekend, we hope you'll enjoy the results of it anyway.
So thanks, Rob. And this has been a Gadget Guide on Cambridge 105 Community Radio in your city. This will be available as a podcast to download from iTunes and from the website. And we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another Gadget Guide.
Absolutely. See you then. And thanks, Julian.
Cheers.